Hey Trailblazers, this is Jason, your host of the Trailblazing Texas podcast. Before we jump into our latest episode, I've got some incredible news for you. Are you gearing up for your next big hike or backpacking trip? Well, we at Trailblazing Texas podcast have partnered up with Trekker Joe's, the ultimate Texas outfitter, to bring you something I feel absolutely special. Listeners, you of the Trailblazing Texas podcast can now get a one-time 15% off their gear purchases at Trekker Joe's. That's right. Whether you're a first-time customer at Trekker Joe's or a repeat customer like me, you can save big and hit the trails well-prepared. So upon checkout, use code TTP15 to claim your 15% discount and in the process support an amazing local Texas business. So happy trails, and don't forget to tell your hiking buddies. Now on with the episode. Welcome to the Trailblazing Texas podcast, where we embark on a journey through our diverse Texas landscapes and breathtaking trails while always engaging with our amazing Texas hiking community. So settle in, tighten up those bootlaces, and get ready for the thrilling tales awaiting for you on this episode. Welcome to the Trailblazing Texas podcast. I'm your host, Jason, and today I am totally pumped about our next guest coming to us, and I'm going to do my best to pronounce this correctly, but I don't know that there's too many things from Washington State that I can pronounce correctly. The names are too much for me being, I guess, from Texas, but coming to us all the way from Snohomish, Washington, we have the founder of Kula Cloth, Anastasia. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much, Jason. And you nailed the pronunciation.
Yes. All right. And before we dive into it, because there's a lot that I want to get to, I got something to surprise you with. I don't know how familiar you are with the podcast, but we have a lightning round. And I always, probably at the last 3 months, started doing this at the very beginning of the podcast. To me, it's a way for me and the listeners to get to know you. And as they know, you've never seen these questions. So these are surprise questions in the lightning round. So are you ready?
I am ready.
All right. And it's not too hard. I had a family member come on the podcast. And during the podcast, I just looked and I said, River, these questions are actually kind of hard. I'm sorry for this, but here we go. All right. Favorite trail snack.
Favorite trail snack is definitely chocolate. Any type of chocolate.
If it is trail morning, you're fixing to start a hike. Is it coffee or tea?
Coffee. Definitely coffee.
One piece of gear you'd never leave behind besides the Kula Cloth.
Oh boy. Besides the Kula Cloth, I would say a headlamp, because I've done that before and it was a mistake.
What is a dream hike or backpacking trip that is currently on your bucket list?
In 2011, I completed half of what is called the Snowman Trek in Bhutan. And the second half of that trek has always haunted me. So yeah. My dream trek is to go back to Bhutan and finish the Snowman Trek.
All right. Best post-hike meal you've ever had?
Oh, man. It's probably got to be some type of pizza. I think my husband and I did a hike in Winthrop in the Pasayton Wilderness, and I thought we had to hike out 15 miles. It ended up being 23. we were not prepared for that extra 8 miles. And when we got out, we had this amazingly delicious pizza in Winthrop. And I think that was very rewarding pizza.
Nice. Funniest customer story you've ever heard?
I once had a review on the website of somebody who said that the Kula Cloth wasn't working because liquid was just dripping off the side of it and it wouldn't stay flat while they were trying to hold it. And I realized through visualizing this that the customer literally thought that the Kula cloth was meant as a pee pad, and they were holding it directly under themselves and trying to catch an entire bladder full of urine with a 0.5 ounce cloth. And I was speechless.
Oh man. All right. Give us one fun fact about trains.
Oh my goodness. A fun fact about trains. I don't know if this is fun, but but trains can come on any track in any direction at any time. And that is like the number one rule of railroading is that to keep yourself safe. A lot of people think that train tracks are directional, like a street where train will be going the same way on each track and that it's very predictable. And unfortunately, that gets people into sticky situations sometimes. So if you could remember anything about trains, it's that they can come on any track, any direction, any time, and they can't swerve to hit you. So there is a surefire way to not get hit by a train, and it's just don't be on the tracks.
There you go. I love it. Yeah, I saw that post about the background that you working at I don't remember the company.
It was BNSF Railway.
Yeah,
BNSF, I was a railroad special agent for about 5.5 years.
Nice. All right. Most underrated hiking spot in your opinion?
The Trinity Alps in California. It is a wilderness area that gets sort of, I think, overlooked because there are, you know, the Sierras and other areas in California take a lot of attention. And the Trinity Alps is kind of this tiny little wilderness area. And I totally underestimated it. I had a chip on my shoulder because I had done the Wind River High Route. And I thought, Trinity Alps, I'll be fine. It kicked my butt. And it is some of the most absolutely spectacular scenery I've ever seen in my life.
Really?
Wow. Yeah. Stunning. Really, really stunning.
Huh. I'll have to look into that. All right. Worst trail fail or embarrassing moment that you would admit to?
Oh, that I would admit to. I, on a backpacking trip once, this was a off-trail loop that I had planned through the Alpine Lakes Wilderness, and we got to camp the very first night, and I realized that I had somehow forgotten to pack my water treatment. This is during a time when I was using Aquamira drops, which is more of a chemical treatment for water, and so luckily, I had the Katadyn tabs in my first aid kit, but those take hours to actually treat water as opposed to just 5 minutes that the Aquamira takes. So we ended up having to hike out a day early because we didn't have a way to treat our water properly. And as a backpacking instructor, I felt pretty stupid. I also forgot my Kula cloth on a backpacking trip once. I don't know if I should admit that. Yeah, that was embarrassing. Like when you're the founder of the company and actually the creator of the piece of gear, and then you forget it on a trip, you feel pretty stupid.
Yeah, I've had an embarrassment. You know, I'm preaching water, water, water. But when I get on a backpacking trip, and mostly it's out in West Texas where it's massive water carries, it's a big concern because there's no water out there. And, you know, you're carrying 8, 9, 10 liters. So I'm like dialing it down to the ounce. And one time I don't remember how many nights we were out, 2 or 3. And I'm like, oh man, I got it. I can camel up before we leave. And then I've got 5 ounces, blah, blah. And I ran out of water onto the second day. And my really good friend Henning, who is always with me on these adventures, took, you know, 9 or 10 liters. And so I said, hey, Henning, I drank the wrong liter. Thought I had a lot more than I did. You know, can I have some water? And he's like, yeah. And he just kept walking. And so I'm like, you know, it's hot. There's no shade. The sun is cooking you. And then we get to camp and I don't say anything. And I know that he's just being a jerk because he's always a jerk. And so I finally said, dude, I need the water. And he goes, oh, yeah, yeah, I forgot. So, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
So that's how I got my trail name 5 liter, because I always, whether it was an overnight or a multi-night, it was 5 liters, and I've learned my lesson.
Wow.
What is one song that is always on your trail playlist?
Probably Blinding Lights by The Weeknd.
All right.
It's a great, I'm a big dancer in my any time of the day, and Blinding Lights is sort of my trademark dance song.
All right. I'll have to look that one up. I haven't heard it.
It's great.
So would you rather be stuck in the wilderness without a tent or without the kula cloth?
Oh, man. I feel like I feel like hygiene is one of those things that derails a trip pretty quickly and can make you more susceptible to infections and get you pretty sick pretty quickly. And I feel like I could probably make a shelter. So we're going to go with leave the tent behind. I will hone in my alone skills, build a shelter out of sticks and moss, and I'll keep the kula cloth with me.
Nice. And, you know, maybe this next question, maybe the kula cloth has this, but what would be the theme song for kula cloth?
The theme song for the kula cloth. Oh, my gosh. I've never even thought about a theme song for kula cloth. Maybe Florence and the Machine's song Free.
All right.
I feel love like it's a piece of gear that gives people the freedom to focus on what the reason they went out on the trail to begin with, which is like to have this deeper connection to themselves and to nature. And nobody goes hiking to think about toilet paper or you know, how uncomfortable they are. And so I feel like the song Free by Florence and the Machine would be a great theme song for Kula.
Nice. I'll have to look that one up as well.
It's one of my favorites.
Yeah. All right. True or false? Kula cloth has seen more of the world than most passports.
True. Absolutely true.
Fill in the blank. I knew Kula cloth was a success when.
The very first day that I made my website live, I had it in my mind that I was either going to become the laughingstock of the outdoor community for launching this product, or people were going to think that I was brilliant for launching the product. And I was physically ill the day that I launched the website. And when I say launched the website, I literally just like put it up on my personal Facebook page. This was not like a planned, targeted launch. This is on my personal Facebook page because this is scrappy. And I announced to the world this business, and I opened my website up for pre-sale, and I had my first order within less than a minute. And the woman who placed the order made a comment in her order that just said, Anastasia, you're brilliant. And I feel like it was like the universe kind of acknowledging that it had been the right decision for me to say yes.
That's wonderful.
It was very sweet.
Do you have that comment like in a picture frame?
It's actually probably still in my Shopify store. And wow. But I do have a photo of the package that I sent out to that woman, and I wrote a big note on the back of it to her telling her that it was my first order that I had ever received.
Gosh.
Yeah, order 1001. For some reason on Shopify, it doesn't start with number 1, it's 1001 because I think they have to do 4 digits for whatever reason. And so, order 1001 was on July 20th of 2018, I think at 12:01 p.m.
That's incredible. That's
really
awesome.
Cool. Yeah.
All right. Let's just pretend this time of year, so hopefully there's not a lot of snow that has started or the snow has melted. Are you trail runners or hiking boots?
Trail runners.
No brands, but just maybe like family of gear. So like tents, sleeping bags, backpacks. Most overrated piece of gear.
Most overrated piece of gear. I would say, at least for me, like kitchen supplies. I'm not much of a backpacking foodie. I'll sort of put together my own dehydrated meals. Mm-hmm. And so things like pots or the kitchen sink where you can wash your dishes in it, all of that stuff, I feel like I'm not going to get sucked down the rabbit hole of carrying all that stuff.
All right.
Also pack covers. I do not use a pack cover. I line my backpack usually with just a trash bag.
Yes. That's great advice to the listeners. And speaking of meals and all that, cold soak or boiling water?
I'm definitely a boiling water person. I like my warm drinks and I like having a warm meal.
All right, nice. All right, the last two questions, we have some controversy with this next question. And then the last question is the most important question of the podcast and really gives us the direction. Does it end immediately or does it continue? So the controversy question, and I'm going to try to limit the controversy if you say the wrong answer, but if it's the right answer, you get a thumbs up and we keep going.
Okay.
Best for hydration, water bottles or hydration bladder?
Oh, I personally use a bladder. Uh-oh. I personally like using the bladder because I feel like I personally remember to drink more when the tube is right there. And if I have to stop and take a water bottle out of my backpack, I find that I won't do it. But I have both. So maybe that just smoothed over the
I'm just going to say I respect your opinions and to the next question.
Okay.
You know, I'm a water bottle person and I have, I don't know how many smart water bottles and I find them on the trail and I just wash them out and use them. And I probably would be a bladder person because I can't reach, I'm in my 50s. I can't reach back and grab, but the Trekker Joe's water bottle sleeve, these holders that fit on the front of your backpack, it is.
See, maybe that's my problem is that it is hard for me to reach the water bottle, but I don't have a sleeve. I feel like I actually like drinking out of a bottle better than I like drinking out of a bladder. In fact, I bring a bottle of some type to have at camp because I don't like drinking out of the bladder. So maybe I'm going to have to go for the Trekker Joe's sleeve.
I have and you could probably see in very old episodes when I wasn't trying to sell my house, racks of gear, Z-Packs, Hyperlite, everything. Nothing has changed the way I hike and backpack from a piece of gear perspective than that Trekker Joe's. They're right here. They're easy, accessible. And also, like, I see how much water I have. I see how much water the people that I'm with have. So I know if somebody's struggling, then I'm like, all right, I need to back off my water to maybe be able to support them. So yeah, Trekker Joe's, check it out.
I'm genuinely going to get some because there's a lot of pain points with the bladder for me, actually. Number one, I have to almost completely disassemble my pack to even see how much I have left. And it's awkward to get in and out. I mean, I basically have to unpack my backpack on the trail if I want to refill it. So, okay, I'm sold. you might have a convert.
Hey, and you can use a code. I'll get you a discount.
Okay.
I'll let you know.
Please do.
Last question. Most important question of the podcast. Oh, second most important question of the podcast. The last question of the podcast is the most important. But this is really going to dictate how this progresses. So what is your favorite of all times Texas hiking podcast that you've been a guest on?
Yours. Yes. By Anastasia. Far. I mean, and I've been a lot of Texas hiking podcasts before.
Yes. I know. I think I might be the only one, but you know, it still warms my heart that I asked that question probably on the last 10 or 15 guests, and I'm batting 1,000. It's Trailblazing Texas Podcast. So
amazing.
Thank you.
That is quite the record.
Yes. All right. So as we start to progress, so that was the last question of lightning round. Hopefully it was
a lot of fun
for you. You survived.
It was really fun. Yes.
I don't know if you ever heard the Hiking Rev. He's in California, and I had him on, and I said, oh, sorry, Rev, to drop this on you, but you know, there's a lightning round, and you could just see his face. He was like, oh man, like, what is this? But yeah, so it's a lot of fun, and you know, it's a way the listeners can get to know you. And I think also, not to sound corny, but I feel that it brings a connection with myself as a host and the guest. And it just kind of like, you know, we're here to have fun and, you know, and get to know you. And so
I loved it. It's a great icebreaker.
Yes, that's the right word. Thank you. All right. So before we get into the episode, I have to touch on, and to the listeners, if you have no knowledge of this, or if you're not already connected to the musical Mountaineers, you are truly missing out. So, Anastasia, I don't even know how to, this is just not scripted, not thought about, but to me, it's very important that the listeners know about this just a bit and get connected. So just real quickly, how did this idea, first off, what is it? And I could tell them, but I think it's 100 times better for you to tell them. And then also, like, what is it? And then how can the listeners get connected to this wonderful thing?
Yeah. So the musical Mountaineers is a duo of myself playing the violin and my musical partner, Rose, who plays the piano. And we perform unannounced concerts, usually at sunrise or sunset, for nobody in the Cascade Mountains, usually up on some summit. And we started doing this. Our very, very first concert ever was September 1st of 2017. It did not start with a desire to make Instagram videos or to become anything. In fact, we were not using the name The Musical Mountaineers. It was really born from this serendipitous series of events. I, at the time, maybe about a year before this, I was working as a special agent for BNSF Railway. I was a pretty miserable, negative person. If there was a group of people complaining, I probably would have been the one leading the charge, which is hard for people to imagine now, but that is true. Take my word for it. And I had a near-death experience in early 2017 that really changed my perspective on life. And I realized that I needed to change how I was living. And so I started doing a lot of things that at the time felt maybe a little bit woo-woo to me, like meditation and having a gratitude practice. And it was during the midst of this kind of time of self-discovery that I came home from work at the railroad late one night at, I don't know, 2 a.m. And I was getting into bed, and this idea literally just popped into my head. And it was very, very clearly an idea that said, go play your violin on the summit of a mountain. And I remember thinking, yes, this is it. This is my ticket out of the railroad. And so I logged into Craigslist and I posted an ad for myself as an adventure elopement violinist. And I remember waking up the next day thinking that I was going to have a flood of requests. Of course, who the heck wants to hike with some creepy violinist from Craigslist up a mountain alone. And so needless to say, I had no requests, but it was like I had planted this seed out into the universe a little bit. And about a year or so later, actually maybe less than that, I was again kind of in the midst of having made this decision to pursue the things that I actually loved and wanted to do in my life. And I posted a book about hiking on my personal Instagram, which had about 100 followers at the time. And I was like, oh, it's a big giveaway. And one person entered, and it was Rose, who I had never met before. And I sent her the book. She won this book. So we had kind of connected through Instagram. Turns out she lived 15 minutes from me. And one day she reached out to me with some questions about climbing Mount Baker, which is a large volcano here in Washington State, because she was about to do it. She knew that I had climbed Baker, wanted to ask me about it. We got together. And at some point in the conversation, we both knew we were musicians. We sort of I shared, oh, it's my dream to bring my violin up into the mountains. And unbeknownst to me, she had literally been photoshopping pictures of pianos up into the mountains her whole life. And she had been trying to figure out a way to buy some cheap piano to like drag out into the wilderness somehow. Wow. And so it was like this kind of stars aligning moment. And we hatched this plan. She decided to buy a keyboard. At the last minute, we said, let's bring gowns, you know, dress and make it feel like this formal concert. And on September 1st, 2017, we hiked up into the mountains and played our first sunrise concert. And we shared a little video of it on Facebook, I think, and not, you know, just for fun. And it kind of went crazy. And the next thing we knew, we were on the local news. And since then, we've performed at well over 40 different summits. We never announce our concerts. And we've had the opportunity to perform on stage at Benaroya Hall in Seattle now 4 different times to raise money for both the Washington's National Parks Fund and Washington Trails Association. Will be doing that again in April of 2026. And it has just been such a cool way to connect with people, to use our music, to give back to organizations that are supporting trails and national parks. And I think there's something really powerful about the connection that people feel when they listen to music and observe nature at the same time. It's like this very powerful feelings are elicited. And it has been such a special part of my life. And I just love it.
I can tell you to the listeners, is it just Instagram where they can kind of connect?
Instagram. And then if you go on YouTube and just search for the Musical Mountaineers, you will be able to find a ton of full-length videos there as well.
So to the listeners, get connected. I promise you will not be disappointed, but there is a warning. Make sure you have nothing that you want to do of importance that day, because it is a rabbit hole of you are going to be mesmerized and you're not going to want to stop watching these videos, and you will throw down some time with all the videos. And it's funny. There's, you know, I have a connection to Washington State. I have a really good friend, John, who lives up there. And of course my daughter does. And so he told me about this, the Musical Mountaineers years ago. And it was shortly when I first met him. And that was just to make it short, that is a bucket list item, is to get up to a peak or a saddle and to witness you in person. So I'm just throwing it out there. John, you owe me. If you ever have a location and it somehow gets to my inbox, mum's the word.
Got it.
All right. And if I ever, you know, we go to Seattle area at least once a year to visit John and my daughter. So I'll definitely, that would be amazing to.
Yeah. The April, if you are around in April of 2026, we've hiked a peak back in early September, actually a very large peak here in the North Cascades called Mount Pugh. And our friend Mitch is a very, very talented cinematographer. And so he filmed this incredible video of us up on the summit. And so for the Washington Trails Association concert, we will actually be on stage live performing while the world premiere of this video is shown to the audience. It's a really emotional, incredible experience. Like, it gives people this immersive experience of what it was like to be there on the summit with us. And I'm super excited to share this video. It was a very hard climb. It was about 5,300 feet of vertical elevation gain with a piano and a violin. And it was a rough day.
Wow. So thank you for that, and kind of talking about the musical mountaineers. This was kind of an ad hoc thing. So, John, you're welcome, and the story is amazing.
Thank you.
All right. So as we start to kind of dive into Kula Cloth, I think it's important for me and to the listeners, you know, we got to know a little bit about you in the lightning round, but really diving into the episode, can you tell us a little bit about your hiking and backpacking and journey and kind of really how it started for you?
Yeah, I was lucky enough as a kid to spend a lot of time outside. I was really bullied as a child, and being outside was sort of always the place where I felt like I could be myself. So I was sort of always the kid who was playing in the dirt. I went on my first camping trip when I was 12 years old, a car camping trip. And then when I was 13, my parents took us, at the time we were living in Pennsylvania, and my parents took us on this month-long trip to visit all the national parks out west. So Glacier National Park, Yellowstone, the Tetons. When I was 12, I also started volunteering for the National Park Service at a historic site in Pennsylvania called Hopewell Furnace National Historic Site. So I had this really strong connection to parks and to being outside. I had never backpacked. In fact, the first time I ever saw backpackers was at Glacier National Park when I was 13. I kind of pointed at these people carrying these huge packs and asked my mom what they were doing. And she said, well, they're carrying everything they need and they're going to go out into the backcountry and camp for a few days. And I remember thinking, I want to do that someday. And as a kid, I always wanted to be a park ranger. And I ended up kind of getting temporarily distracted in college by pre-med, because everybody was pre-med. And when I graduated college, I sort of had this identity crisis of not being sure what I wanted to do. And I was volunteering out at the national park one day, and the superintendent said, what do you want to do, Anastasia? And I kind of looked around at this beautiful park that I was in, and I said, this, I want to do this. And he said, well, why don't you go to school to become a park ranger? And it was like this light bulb went off in my head, and I almost felt stupid for forgetting that that's what I had really wanted all along. And at the time, this was just a few years after 9/11, and the National Park Service was not hiring interpretive rangers at that time. They were really focused on law enforcement rangers. So I ended up finding a law enforcement ranger academy, And it happened to be in Mount Vernon, Washington State. Funny story, I actually thought it was Mount Vernon outside of Washington, D.C., like the one in Virginia, which is why I applied to it, because I was living at in Maryland at the time, and I thought, oh, I'll be so close to home. This is perfect. And then after I had sent in my application, I realized, oh, shoot, I just applied to one in Washington State, because when you live on the East Coast, you forget that Washington State exists, because everybody just calls Washington, you know, DC is Washington to us. So, but I was intrigued because I had made that mistake and I thought, well, I've never been to Washington State. It's only for a couple months to go to the academy. I'll come out and then I can move back home. And I came out here, fell in love with it, and decided to stay. And I ended up becoming a park ranger for the state of Washington back in 2005. And I was doing a ton of day hiking. But that year, I had the opportunity to go on my very first backpacking trip. And anybody who's from Washington or familiar with Washington will laugh when I say that my very first backpacking trip was climbing Mount Baker, which is this 10,500 foot volcano in the Cascades. It is absolutely not, under no circumstances should that be your first backpacking trip. But I was going with a group of people who knew what they were doing, and I didn't know what I was doing. And the guy leading the trip was this 60-year-old guy, and I didn't have the heart to ask him, what do I bring to go poop and pee? This, of course, the irony of this story is not lost on me. And so I brought no toilet paper on this trip. And I realized the literal gravity of my mistake. I think about halfway through my Mountain House lasagna the first night, I was like, uh-oh, we're in trouble. And I ended up stealing toilet paper from my tent mate. And when I say that, I don't mean that I metaphorically stole it. I mean, I literally waited for her to be out of the tent so I could go in and sneak the toilet paper. And the whole trip was, I look back on that trip now and realize so clearly that the whole trip was really shaped by my experience with freaking out about my hygiene for most of the trip, because I was so worried about, well, what if I have to go to the bathroom again? There's realistically only so many times you can steal toilet paper from somebody before they start to notice that it's missing. So I had that experience. It was my first backpacking trip. And then I just fell head over heels in love with mountaineering and backpacking. And I spent the next more than decade learning everything that I could about it. I've climbed all the volcanoes in Washington multiple times each. I then sort of moved into more obscure peaks. I have a love of doing off-trail high routes. So I've done the Wind River High Route, the Trinity Alps High Route. I've done high routes through the Sierras in California. I've done a ton of desert hiking in canyonlands, more backpacking than I can possibly count here in Washington State. And all of those experiences led me to ultimately becoming a backpacking instructor for women. And I started teaching a beginner's backpacking class for a nonprofit called Washington Outdoor Women. And that was kind of when I was open to exploring the idea of using a pea cloth, because I thought, well, it's a disgusting, disgusting idea. But if I like it, maybe I could share it with my students. So I've done a lot. I've done a lot of hiking.
Wow. When you said Baker, immediately what popped in my mind is that's like when I hear someone doing their first Colorado 14er and they do Long's Peak.
Yeah.
Like, you know, people die on Long's Peak all the time. And that's my first one. I'm like, what the heck?
Yeah. And Baker is a glaciated volcano that requires you to rope up I mean, there's crevasses that people fall into. It is not a route to be messed with. As far as volcanoes go here in Washington State, I would say that Mount Adams or Mount St. Helens are probably the least technical, but then you get into then maybe Glacier Peak and then Baker and Rainier. But in many respects, Baker is almost more difficult than Rainier, depending on what route you do, because Rainier, because there's so many guided groups, depending on when you hit your climb on Mount Rainier, you might have kind of a well packed down path up to the summit because of all the guided climbs. But on Baker, there's not as many. And a lot of times you're sort of picking your own route through some challenging terrain, and it's the crevasses open up. And yeah, it, quite the ridiculous first backpacking trip.
I had Brandon on the podcast, and he is, or I don't know if he's still doing it or maybe part-time. He's a mountaineering guide on Hood.
Mm.
And so it's funny, you know, to hear these adventures that him and John and John's wife, Megan, were on. And so you get John's version of this story, then Megan's version of this story, and then Brandon as the guide's version of the story. So, it, you know, it was pretty neat to kind of put all those together.
Yeah.
So John took me to Rainier a couple times, and once it was just him and I. I mean, first time I ever touched an ice axe.
Wow.
This was like in June or July, and there were still just tons of snow. And so we get, I guess that the trail is paradise, and we get to a section where I guess it's below the Muir snowfields.
Panorama Point.
And it's, I mean, the climb up is
very steep. Yes. Yeah, there's that one snow face there getting up to Panorama Point that when it's snowy, that gets pretty steep. There's been many times there where I'm wearing snowshoes up to that point and then have to transition to crampons to get up the slope.
Yeah, so I had micro spikes. And so we're going up there. And before that, he's like, all right, you know, this is some avalanche. You know, see this little crack and we need to cut across this. And I'm like, Ava, what?
Yeah, probably not something you have to think about in Texas
yes,
very much.
Absolutely. And so we got up halfway, and he was very good. You know, he's teaching me the French step, this step, and blah, blah. And so I just, my mind thinking that I don't know when I step going up this ascent, I don't know how the snow is going to react. And so I couldn't concentrate, and we got about halfway up and I said, John, I got to turn around. I can't focus on what I'm doing. And also you know, there was a guided group behind us.
Mm-hmm.
And so that added more pressure, like, oh, okay, I don't want to slip and take out everybody. So,
yeah, that's a steep slope. I mean, I've seen some
Thank
people,
you.
It is a very steep slope. And I've seen some people going up it who probably should have turned around. And I have watched them sort of attempt to make it down in snowshoes, and descending that slope on a cheap pair of snowshoes that doesn't have any traction around the edges of it, mm-hmm, is sketchy at best. I mean, descending that slope in snowshoes in general is very challenging. I usually take the snowshoes off and just kind of plunge step my way down with crampons on. But I really feel like if you're uncomfortable going up that slope, you will be far more uncomfortable coming down it.
Yeah. And so I'm glad that I turned around, and going down wasn't horrible, but yeah, it was, I wasn't out of the woods. I, you know, I could feel it.
Yeah.
And the same thing happened to me doing Grays and Torreys in Colorado. So we hit Grays, traversed to Torreys, and then coming back down, I didn't want to do Grays again. So there was a freaking snow traverse in July, and the pictures look like it's like this. It was like this. And I had probably 18 inches of packed snow to walk across.
Snow traverses are the worst.
Oh,
the
if I would have slipped, I would have been off the mountain, like probably thousands of feet of sliding down this thing. And then you get the local Colorado kids, and they're there's only room for me. And they're trying to come the other direction. And then they start going up above me. And I'm like, bro, if you slip, we're all gone.
Yeah.
And oh, yeah.
snow traversing is definitely I've done some snow traverses in the Cascades before that are so sketchy that I think I've blocked them out of my memory permanently.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny because all my friends that are in Texas, like, man, that's nothing. But John is like, yeah, no, that was pretty serious.
Yeah.
So thank you, John, and to my Texas friends.
Yeah.
So what's one trail or adventure that you've been on that you think has had the biggest impact on you personally?
Honestly, I think the Wind River High Route always stands out in my mind because that's the trip where I actually had the idea for Kula Cloth came to me. And it was just such a challenging trip. It was about 100 miles. Most of it was off trail. The longest section of off trail was about 50 miles. Whoa. We saw one other person on the entire route, at least until we got back to the actual sort of trail itself. And this, that particular trip, I did it before we had, I think before I had Gaia on my phone. So this is back in the day of like old GPS devices where you were just sort of looking at dots and triangles. And so the micro navigation, the mental challenge. I remember on the very, very first day laying out 9 paper maps, and each map, you know, I knew where our route was going, but I had all these maps, and I just remember trying to comprehend the distance and the route finding and all the unknowables between where we were and where we needed to go. And realizing that if I attempted to comprehend all of that, that I was going to quickly overwhelm myself and that I really just needed to focus on what is my next step. Yeah. And so that trip, after the first night, I stopped looking at all the maps every night and overwhelming myself. And I just focused on, okay, what is the next thing I need to do right now and right now and right now? And really, like acknowledging that I was fine in every moment was very, very eye-opening to me. And I think that's a lesson that I've carried into running a business, a lesson that I've carried into running, just living life, is that we can very, very easily exist in our own heads in this imaginary world of what ifs and maybes, and, or conversely, we can ruminate about the past and what we should have done. And in doing that, we sort of miss out on the actual present moment that we're in. Yeah. And that trip, I think it was coming more and more into that present moment. And instead of getting so lost in worry, just being grateful for the moment of being out in this incredible place and having this experience, I think that was really what kind of paved the way for the idea for Kula to kind of arrive on that trip. And then, of course, that idea changed my whole life, the whole trajectory of my life forever. So, yeah, I just that trip stands out to me as probably my favorite and I guess my proudest backpacking trip that I've ever done. It's quite a difficult trip. It's more of a mountaineer's route through the winds, not for the faint of heart, but if it was some of the most beautiful country I've ever been in.
So is that comparable to like the Ptarmigan Traverse?
It is comparable, when I did the Ptarmigan Traverse.
So John and Brandon and Megan, the stories that I get to put together from them was they were on the Ptarmigan Traverse.
Yeah. So I did the Ptarmigan Traverse back in 2000. It may have been 2009 or 10. I forget the exact year I did it. When I did the Ptarmigan Traverse, it was a very high snow year, and that made the trip much more technical. So in a lower snow year, or if you hit it right, a lot of the sections that I was doing very, very challenging and treacherous snow traverses on, kind of like what you described, a lot of those sections actually have sort of little climber's paths, and that can make it a little bit easier. I mean, there's pluses and minuses of having snow and no snow, but it was pretty challenging when I did it. There's definitely more of a mountaineering aspect to the Ptarmigan Traverse, some glaciers to cross that require some more technical knowledge. The Wind River High Route did not have glaciers that you needed to rope up on. It did have two glaciers that you had to walk across, but neither of them required you to be roped up. They were sort of dead glaciers, more like just snow fields. Mm-hmm. And all I had for that trip was microspikes. The challenge on the Wind River High Route was the boulders. So there were these long, long stretches of hiking where you were literally just boulder hopping for miles. And you would be going along. There was one very, very steep ascent up to a pass called Blaurock Pass, which was up at over 12,000 feet. And I still remember climbing up past these boulders, and you're just kind of scrambling with your hands up and over these boulders. And some of the boulders are car sized, house sized. And I remember coming up to one, and all of a sudden this literal house sized boulder just starts like rocking. And it was terrifying. And so there was definitely very different elements of treachery on both of them. Some steep snow sections on the Wind River High Route that we had to descend. I remember getting back to the trail on the final day, like when we finally hit an actual trail for the first time in like 90 miles. And I could just feel that like anxiety of sort of navigating, like I could just feel it all drain out of me. And it was like, oh, I can relax. That being said, it's not like I didn't enjoy the trip. It was the most stunning places I've ever seen, places that most people will never get to see in their life. And I loved that trip. But it was also one of those trips where, like, when we actually made it back to the car, I did feel pretty relieved.
Listening to the stories with, you know, John and Megan, I don't think Megan talked to John for about a week after that Ptarmigan Traverse.
I kind of empathize.
So currently, if you look at the trips that you do, whether it's day hiking or backpacking trips, do you prefer solo trips, group hikes, with family? And that wraps up another exciting episode of the Trailblazing Texas podcast. We hope you enjoyed the episode today, and stay tuned for our next episode where we will pick back up where we left off and guarantee to uncover many more hiking gems and share many more tips to enhance your experience on the trail. Until then, happy trails and happy hiking.